I'm John Dankosky from Next and the New England News Collaborative. The frightening study released last week by a UN panel shows that climate change has become an even greater and more immediate threat than the already dire warnings had predicted. But climate change still doesn't rise to the top of the list of concerns in the statewide political races around our region. That's a bit surprising, considering that New England residents seem to want their elected officials to do something about it. A poll this August from the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication shows that about 56% of Americans want their governors to do more to combat climate change, and that number's a bit higher in coastal states like Maine, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. So how are candidates talking about climate change? Well, with us now is Annie Ropeek. She's a reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio and the New England News Collaborative. Annie, welcome back to Next.
Hi, John.
Also with us is Bruce Gellerman. He's a reporter for WBUR. Hi there, Bruce.
Hey, greetings, John.
So, Annie, let's start with you and with the Republican governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu, who's up for re-election. What has his record been on issues of climate change and the environment?
Chris Sununu's taken a pretty hands-off approach when it comes to climate in his first 2 years. As our governor, he often will say it's more of a federal issue than a state one. He has said in the past that he's not sure about some of the scientific conclusions that are broadly accepted about the role of carbon emissions in climate change, for example. This is actually him taking a bit of a step back from how he talked about the issue on the campaign trail. Sununu is an MIT-trained environmental and civil engineer. He used to run a ski resort, so he has tons of firsthand experience with this issue. And he has played that up in the past, but in the state house, he has taken more of a step back and taken a wait and see approach and left it to the federal government.
What about his Democratic challenger, Molly Kelly?
Molly Kelly really toes the Democratic Party line when it comes to climate change. She often will bring it up the same way that Sununu does, where they like to sort of say the word, but we don't really hear a ton of specifics from either of them. Here's some tape of Molly Kelly answering a question about natural gas at a forum during the primary campaign.
You mentioned climate change. I believe it. Climate change is real. We have a governor who said climate change is not real. So I think that what policies we move forward on our energy have to be based on fact and on science.
So beyond that, we don't hear a ton of specifics from Molly Kelly. She says we need to wean off fossil fuels, increase renewable development. She has a few ideas for how to enact that, but again, doesn't go into a ton of detail for how to fund or scale up that development.
Let's go to Massachusetts and talk about the Republican governor there, Charlie Baker. How has his record been on environmental issues and climate change?
Well, according to the Environmental League of Massachusetts and half a dozen other environmental organizations around the state who give him a grade every year, the latest grade has been a C, and he's been C all through his term of office so far, and he gets a couple of Fs. He gets 9 Ds, 4 Cs, 5 Bs, and 4 As on 27 different issues.
So that's a pretty wide range, but I would guess that he grades a little bit better than a lot of Republican governors around the country. He's a Massachusetts Republican, after all. So yeah. So that C grade is probably something that's about what you can expect. Tell me about that, about his place within the Republican Party.
Well, he's an anomaly, as you say. He wrote a letter to the Department of Energy when Trump wanted to drill offshore for gas and oil, and he wrote a very stern letter to the head of the Department of Energy saying, no way, Jose. Massachusetts is at the end of the energy road, so we have to import most of the energy that we convert into electricity and heat. So, you know, he's cognizant of that. He's been pushing big time into offshore wind, you know, but he takes a very regional approach to energy. Because we are, you know, kind of landlocked in sense without offshore wind. We are landlocked from our energy supplies. So he has to look north, south, and east and west. So he's taken a very practical, pragmatic, but not a very ambitious, cutting edge. I think this is the environmental organizations here say, you know, he's okay. He needs to be a lot bolder.
Well, what about his Democratic opponent in the gubernatorial race, Jay Gonzalez? Where does he stand on some of these issues?
Gonzalez is more progressive, if that's the term to use, in joining with environmentalists and people who believe and say, and scientists who assert that we are entering a cataclysmic climate future. So he takes a much more aggressive kind of approach. He wants to triple the renewable portfolio standards that we have. He wants to achieve 50% of renewable energy by 2030. He has, offshore wind. He's doubling down. But in that sense, he's going along with the governor, who's proposing another 1,600 megawatts. He wants to eliminate constraints on solar energy. There are net metering caps and so on. He wants to require that all buildings where it's possible to have solar And he definitely opposes the expansion of natural gas pipeline infrastructure. Not surprisingly, he wants to make Massachusetts the first state in the nation to adopt carbon pricing, basically a carbon tax on all fuel imports, fossil fuel imports that contain carbon.
Of course, the candidates on the campaign trail are only going to talk about these issues in as much as the potential voters really want them to or care about it themselves. Let's actually hear a bit from Elizabeth Henry. She's president of the Environmental League of Massachusetts, talking a little bit about what Massachusetts voters are thinking about this election season.
They're thinking about the economy. They're thinking about education. They're thinking about health care. But we know that across the Commonwealth, there are about 600,000 people for whom environment is a number one or number two issue. And that's a lot.
It seems like a lot, Bruce. Put that into context for us. Is 600,000 people who really care about environmental issues a lot?
In context, there were 2.2 million votes cast in the last gubernatorial election here in Massachusetts, and Baker won by just 40,000 votes. So you could say that's a lot. But, you know, in terms of that list of going down, you know, what's the importance for the electorate here in Massachusetts, it's issue number five, maybe six on their list. So what do people vote on?
Annie, how about you? And what are you hearing in New Hampshire? Are people concerned about the environment this time around? How much do you think people are paying attention to this issue with all the other things they have to worry about at the polls?
You know, interestingly, we don't really even have as much polling data on this as Massachusetts does. We have some periodic voter surveys that come out from the University of New Hampshire. They asked voters before the primary election what their top problem facing New Hampshire, what they thought the top problem was. But the choices were limited to drugs, healthcare, education, and several economic issues. We didn't see energy or climate or the environment in general make that list. But I can say anecdotally that when I talk to voters, especially Democrats, it can be a top issue in places like Portsmouth or in areas that are affected by water contamination and emissions issues. It does rise to the surface a bit more. I think energy is also really rising to the top during this gubernatorial campaign. But as we've said, you know, that's not necessarily an environmental issue for every candidate and every voter, even though, you know, it is sort of linked to climate change at its basic level.
And, you know, John, I should say that, you know, if you change the word energy for jobs, right, then the equation starts changing, I think. So, you know, how do you phrase, you know, energy issues? How do you frame them? Talk about jobs and people start listening a little differently.
That's absolutely what we're seeing in New Hampshire, too. It is a completely an economic issue, whether you're trying to advocate for renewable energy development as a job creator and economic driver, or whether you're saying we need to keep rates down and not oversubsidize renewables in order to help businesses survive in the state.
One of the things that I've heard from the people who are running for governor of Connecticut, especially on the Republican side, is what can a governor really do to help combat climate change? Yeah, maybe there are jobs there, but what can a governor do, him or herself? Mm-hmm. Here's Governor Chris Sununu. After Donald Trump, the president of the U.S., pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord in June of 2017.
You know, it's not my job to go through the whole accord and look at the in-depth impacts across the country economically.
I don't know, Annie, it sort of sounds to me like Chris Sununu is saying that, yeah, maybe I can do something in terms of more clean energy jobs, maybe in as much as it helps the economy of New Hampshire, this is something I should be concerned about. But it's not really my job to go through the Paris Climate Accord and figure out what little New Hampshire can do to solve this global problem.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when we asked him after President Trump made that decision around the Paris Climate Accords, what Governor Sununu thought, he said he hadn't really given much thought to it because he saw it as a federal issue. And he tends to sort of focus on the specific policy that you're talking about when it comes to climate change, where other candidates might zoom out and say, like, well, regardless of this specific policy you're talking about, I believe climate change is real. It's something you hear from Democrats a lot. But Governor Sununu, you know, if you ask him about federal coal pollution or air emissions policy, he'll say, well, we don't have coal plants in New Hampshire, but I'm studying it. And, you know, sea level rise, I think we don't see as much conversation around that as maybe we will in several years from now when that is seriously impacting our seacoast region. And then the same thing for warming winters, that is guaranteed going to affect snow and ski tourism in our northern part of our state. And we don't see a ton of direct action on that yet, but I do think this will become a state issue at some point, whether he likes it or not.
And, you know, John, pulling out of the Paris Accords makes the subnational entities, you know, governments like states and cities, much more important because it's going to be up to them to do something about climate change. And also, they're going to feel the effects of climate change most directly. You know, these are very complex issues. They defy political positions because they really are bread and butter economic issues.
And I want to finish with this, and I think this is an important thing for journalists like us. For years, we've been asking candidates questions like, do you believe that humans cause climate change? Do you believe that climate change is real? And the answers to those questions often take up an awful lot of the space that we might devote to covering a topic like this. How do you think about this as a reporter? Because as I think you've both said, the settled science is pretty clear. Could we be asking, I don't know, tighter questions, deeper types of questions of these candidates?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to be doing both, right? I think it's important that voters know if candidates do believe and acknowledge that climate change is real and understand the causes. But then when they give that answer, it's also our responsibility to push past that to the next question. This, you know, the question that says, okay, you've said that you don't believe it's real. And then we lay out the science that says that it is, and we say, given these facts, you know, these realities, what do you propose to do about this particular aspect of climate change that affects our state? It's a question they're going to have to answer regardless of their views on the science. And I think it's our job to keep kind of pushing that issue forward. I'm starting to really see it as one of those issues that's tipping past something we can kind of have a debate around the yes or no of it, the whether or not of it. And you know, it really needs to become a debate around the how are we going to address it, because we're seeing that in the response from voters and from the scientific community to the UN report, which you mentioned at the beginning, and it's not going away. And so I think the more solid the science becomes and solid the consensus becomes, the less acceptable it is for us to just let a candidate stop at no, I don't believe.
Annie Ropeik from NHPR, Bruce Gellerman from WBUR both cover energy and climate change for us. Thank you both so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome, John.
Listen to Next on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.